Hi, and welcome to In the Studio with a 21st Century Perspective on History's Greatest Rock Song.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
I'm Redbeard, and today we go in the studio with the cerebral London band that sold an unbelievable 6 million copies of their very first single.
Turn the wider, shade of fail.
You know, we certainly thought our record was going to be successful. I think when you make your first record, you always think it's going to be successful because you don't know any better. You think, oh, it's my first, you know, it's like people thinking, you know, I'm going to be discovered and I'm going to be a big star. You know, you make your first record and you imagine everyone's going to go and buy it. And we were incredibly lucky because people did.
Hi, this is Robin Trout.
I'm Keith Reed of Procol Harum.
And this is Matthew Fisher of Procol Harum.
And I'm Gary Brooker of Procol Harum, and you're in the studio for the best of Procol Harum.
In 1967, America was still facing heavy bombardment from the British invasion. Led by the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and the Kinks, among many others, the Brits were exporting a largely innocent brand of pop music. But in the spring of 1967, a London group with the odd name of Procol Harum amazed us all. They sold more than 6 million copies of their rather heady debut single called A Whiter Shade of Pale. Now, the name Procol Harum actually was copped the name from a cat that belonged to a friend of their manager. The band, Procol Harum, was the brainchild of piano-playing singer and composer Gary Brooker and lyricist Keith Reed. As the singer for the Paramounts in the early 60s in London, Brooker had been heralded as one of the finest white R&B singers in all of England. The Paramounts were well known for their covers of hip, obscure American soul songs, rivals to the fledgling Rolling Stones. Meanwhile, Keith Reed was busy writing poetry, and he wanted to get into song lyrics in hopes of hooking up with someone who could add music. Luckily, the gods of rock were looking out for Brooker and Reed, because when a local club DJ named Guy Stevens introduced the pair, a rare partnership formed, not unlike that of Elton John and Bernie Taupin years later. The next step, as Brooker and Reed recall, was to figure out what to do with their music. First, Gary Brooker of Procol Harum.
Of course, for a short while there, we thought we were songwriters. And so we tried to sell our songs, if you like, by going to people that I'd known in the business already through the Paramounts. But we didn't have very much luck. It didn't take long before we sat down one day with Guy as well and said, well, I think if we're going to do anything with these songs, we shall have to do them ourselves. In other words, I'd have to come out of retirement and start singing. And so then we thought, what sort of band should we have? We liked very much the old R&B sounds, and, you know, we liked Booker T and we liked Bob Dylan records. And an important part of that was, I mean, obviously you can't do away with bass and drums. We'd always like blues guitar, but the main difference, I suppose, was that we wanted to have both a piano and an organ. Up till then, I think any groups had only had one keyboard player, because obviously you had two. It was two, you know, it was less money to share out. But we really wanted to have that big breadth of sound, and that was where the problem was, because there wasn't many organ players. But
fate's kindly on us.
When we face at first, just go sleep. Turn the wider shade off.
Equaled only by Queen's later hit Bohemian Rhapsody, lyricist Keith Reid's psychedelic tale of a boisterous party set to music borrowed from Johannes Sebastian Bach. Called A Whiter Shade of Pale, it was Procol Harum's number one debut single. Once Keith Reid and singer Gary Brooker decided to form a band rather than try to sell their music, they went about looking for the right musicians. The first person they settled on was organist Matthew Fisher.
What had happened was that I'd been on a tour with Peter Jay and the Jaywalkers at the time, which was they had been engaged to back singer Paul Jones, who used to be in Manfred Mann's band. And it was through that tour that I met the Small Faces, who were also on that tour, and Ian McLagan, their organist. He convinced me that I should buy myself a Hammond organ, which I'd always wanted. And he said, look, you know, there's so much work for Hammond organists now, you know, you just can't lose. If you can play organ, then get yourself a Hammond. So I got myself a Hammond, and I put an advert in a well-known music paper, Hammond organist seeks work. And one of the people that answered was Keith and Gary. And they came to see me and told me all these wild stories about how they're going to form this band that was going to be huge and sell millions of records and be like the Beatles and the Stones. And, you know, and I thought, oh, yeah. Well, that old rubbish.
It's understandable that Fisher would have his reservations about the lofty claims of Brooker and Reid, but the fact remains that Procol Harum did see their very first single achieve overnight success. It was a number one hit virtually the world over, A Whiter Shade of Pale. It caught everybody by surprise. Everyone, that is, except the band Procol Harum. Here's lyricist Keith Reid.
Certainly thought that the record was going to be successful. I think when you make your first record, you always think it's going to be successful because you don't know any better. You think, oh, it's my first, you know, it's like people thinking, you know, I'm going to be discovered and I'm going to be a big star. You know, you make your first record and you imagine everyone's going to go and buy it. We were incredibly lucky because people did. I think the record company, I mean, we were certainly could never have dreamed of the overall success it would have. And to imagine, you know, especially that it's a record that's still played today after all this time, is that's something we could, I don't think, ever have imagined. But I think we expected the record to be a success. As Matthew said, we had all these, we thought we were going to be, you know, we had all these, you know, I guess, dreams and grandiose ideas. And at first, it all came out right. It was later on that reality caught up with us.
Even as A Whiter Shade of Pale was triumphantly perched atop the charts, Procol Harum's manager announced that the strain of too much success too soon had taken its toll on the band and that they'd broken up. But as Gary Brooker and Keith Reid explained, that wasn't exactly the case.
What happened was that we'd put the group together, Matthew had joined, we'd got a bass player and guitarist and a drummer, but it was at this point when we went to make the rest of our songs. I mean, we didn't just cut Whiter Shade of Pale, I think we did three or four songs at that session. But when we got in the studio to do some serious recording, a couple of the guys' style, the drummer and the guitarist, their style didn't quite mould in with what we were doing. And so that is when we changed and got BJ Wilson and Robin Trower. This was all while we were at number one, probably around the world. The last thing you want to do when you're at number one in the world is say, excuse me, you know, we're kind of changing the group. So we didn't break up. Actually, the drummer that was on Whiter Shade of Pale was not the drummer that we started out with. We auditioned him, I think, almost that morning of our session, and we said, well, come on up and play. But when we got there, Denny Cordell, the producer, had already found a session drummer that he'd got in case we didn't find anybody. I suppose to be safe, we used the session drummer who we knew could sort of, you know, do what was asked or play along in a good way. So by the end, you know, within about 4 weeks, the story was that we were a group that was put together especially to go and record this song. It was all session players, and now we've broken up. What we're doing, really, was regrouping for a couple of weeks. And we rehearsed with Robin and BJ, and we went in the studios.
Also, the thing was, in our naivety, we didn't really think about anything other than getting the record right. You know, Whiter Shade of Pale had come out, and it was doing, well, as Gary says, it was number one. And we were in the studio cutting an album, and the tracks weren't coming out as we wanted them. So it was a sort of a simple decision. You know, let's get in a couple of other guys, because, you know, this isn't working. And of course, we never thought to think, what repercussions will this have? We just were sort of fixing on the music and trying to get the record to sound the way we wanted it.
So with two more former Paramounts, guitarist Robin Trower and drummer BJ Wilson, Procol Harum gained some much-needed stability and some oomph. The lineup of Brooker, Reed, Fisher, Trower, and Wilson would go on to record three albums together, 1967's self-titled debut, Shine On Brightly in 68, and 1969's A Salty Dog. It was with A Salty Dog that Procol Harum turned an important corner, getting some full-fledged support in the U.S., Recorded at Abbey Road Studios, A Salty Dog marked the first time in the producer's chair for organist Matthew Fisher. It was Fisher who underscored the significance of the album A Salty Dog to Procol Harum's career.
We were finally in a situation where we were in the studio and it was just us and we could do whatever we wanted. And we were in the studio that we knew where the Beatles recorded. And there was a, you know, we got a bit of a buzz out of just knowing that. And there was this huge cupboard that they had there that was full of the most amazing tambourines, percussion instruments, xylophones, pipes, whistles, bells. I mean, you name it, you know. And it was like Christmas, you know. It was like, hey, yeah, we can use this. It was just, it was for us. I mean, Salty Dog for Procol Harum, I think, was like what Citizen Kane was for Orson Welles. You know, it was, we'd reached that point where we were ready to do it on our own. And we did.
All hands on deck, we've run afloat. I heard the captain cry, explore the ship, replace the cook, let no one leave. ships come home to die. No lofty peak, no fortress bold could match our captain's eye.
Title song to their third album, that's Procol Harum with A Salty Dog. Up next, we'll find out why Matthew Fisher made a drastic career change just as Procol Harum was gaining some long-awaited popularity in the U.S. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you'll find a lot more here at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with the members, past and present, of Procol Harum.
Hi, this is Robin Treharch.
And this is Matthew Fisher.
I'm Keith Reed of Procol Harum.
And I'm Gary Brooker of Procol Harum, and you're in the studio for the best of Procol Harum.
And I'm Redbeard. By the spring of 1969, Procol Harum was starting to make inroads in the United States, thanks in part to their third album, A Salty Dog, and also to a couple of important concert dates, the most notable of which was Procol's performance with a full symphony at the Stratford Shakespeare Festival in Ontario, Canada. In retrospect, this show marked a clear turning point for the band. Ironically, organist Matthew Fisher, who had produced A Salty Dog, chose to leave the band at this portentous juncture in favor of putting his full attention into producing. In the studio, here's Matthew Fisher.
I'd always been very hung up on studio work. It was, going in a recording studio at that time was just a terrific buzz for me. It was really all I lived for. That was really why I got the job as producer, was because I was the one that was most into that. I knew about what the little boxes did, and that, I was the only one who was really that into it at the time. And I was getting fed up with spending so much time, staying in hotels, doing gigs, playing the same songs over and over again. I felt that I was, life was passing me by. I wanted to be working in studios and just do production and things like that. So, that was it, really. It was I just didn't want to go on the road anymore. I just wanted to spend more time in the studio. We'll be right back.
still love that song from the 1970 album Home. That's Procol Harum with Whiskey Train. Now, up until this point, Procol Harum's music was almost exclusively written by piano player Gary Brooker. But with Whiskey Train, guitarist Robin Trower was beginning to show his emerging talent as a composer. Though he had written music for one song prior to Whiskey Train, Trower's place in Procol Harum had pretty much been to add much-needed texture to the keyboard-based arrangements. With more insight on that subject, in the studio, here's Robin Trower.
Well, obviously, I was a rock and roll guitar player who was very, very blues influenced, and in actual fact was the only player in the band that played with, you know, with those obvious influences showing. I'm not saying the other guys hadn't been influenced by that side of music, but obviously the two keyboards were very classical in a lot of the music, and the whole approach was very European, I thought. And so I kind of gave a bit of American music to Procol Harum. That was what I brought to it.
Beginning with the album Home, Procol Harum pared itself down to a four-piece unit, replacing both organist Matthew Fisher and bass player David Knights with another ex-Paramount member. This time it was Chris Copping. From a musical standpoint, Procol Harum now consisted of the same players as the Paramounts during their heyday several years earlier. Curious about this smaller lineup, I asked lead singer, composer Gary Brooker of Procol Harum how it affected the musical arrangements.
I mean, I can't quite remember why we became a four-piece, but we did feel it was time for a change, time perhaps to rock out a little bit more. As Matthew has said, Salty Dog was quite an acoustic album in many ways, a very natural-sounding album, the string things and everything. And I think we just wanted to, the general feeling in the band was that we wanted to be a bit harder, and it seemed a good time to have this change. In fact, I remember one of the reasons for this was that we'd played a few times with The Doors, and they seemed to get away with using a keyboard bass. The Doors didn't have a bass player. They used their organist played a keyboard bass, and we felt that we could, on those numbers where we needed the five instruments, that Chris could play right-hand organ and the left hand on a bass keyboard. And then where the organ was not so important, I'll give you an example like Whiskey Train or something, then Chris would just step over onto regular electric bass. And so we got these little combinations that we could work with four men. It wasn't really a cut down, we saw it as a step forward.
Still
Here's lyricist Keith Reid.
The reason for writing songs is often very obscure, and one which perhaps as a writer you don't fully understand yourself. And I work, I think, very instinctively. I have sort of often have very abstract ideas about a song or a lyric and what I'm trying to do. And I'll often try and just write purely in terms of mood. And I remember just really having the idea of writing something that was just very, very aggressive. I just wanted to write something aggressive. And Simple Sister came out. And, of course, it was a very aggressive lyric. It was just about doing the most horrible things you can imagine to somebody. It was, you know, trying to capture a mood.
Originally from Broken Barricades album, the last Procol Harum album prior to Robin Trower's exit, that's the November 1971 rehearsal of Simple Sister. When we come back, Robin will explain why he left his longtime mates in 1971 to pursue a solo career. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and you can certainly get a lot more here at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with the members of Procol Harum, past and present, for the best of.
Hi, this is Robin Trower.
And this is Matthew Fisher.
I'm Keith Reid of Procol Harum.
And I'm Gary Brooker of Procol Harum, and you're in the studio for the best of Procol Harum.
Many people still don't seem to realize that before Robin Trower became a guitar hero in his own right, Robin handled all the six-string work for Procol Harum. That was from their inception in 67 up through 71. But just before Procol Harum was to attain their greatest success, Robin Trower set out on his own. So, in the studio, I asked Robin why.
Well, I think because I started to write more and more songs, and really I was starting to... I definitely felt I was pulling Procol Harum away from what their identity really, what they were known for, which was that sort of semi-classical rock with the two keyboards and everything. And I was writing more songs, and there wasn't room for those songs to go on a Procol Harum record, because obviously Gary used to write most of the music. So I think, you know, I decided, well, I'd like to do something which was just all guitar and get away from keyboards for a bit. I think I got a bit sick of keyboards, to be honest.
Rusty scabbard now, the sand has taken names to jeer at you. I leave now with regrets. And as the gloom begins to fall, I see there is no, only all. I know you came when salt held high. You did not conquer, only die. Though I hope for something to find, like the sea no base to unwind.
That's Conquistador, a relatively obscure song that was included on Procol Harum's debut album. The live version we just heard, however, peaked at number 16 when it was released from Procol's top 5 album, Live in Concert with the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra. Thanks to a DJ in Edmonton, Canada, Procol Harum had been invited to perform their own material with the symphony there. Intrigued by the possibilities, Procol Harum accepted the invitation and then got busy orchestrating enough music for a full show. Here's singer, composer, piano player Gary Brooker.
We already had the orchestrations to Salty Dog. And we already had the orchestrations which are written for In Hell Twas In I, which we played in Stratford. But of course, that didn't constitute, you know, a full-blown concert. I thought, well, I'll orchestrate whatever else seems to, you know, that would fit. There was a lot of work involved in just doing that. And at some point along the line, we said, well, this is going to come together. It's going to be a once-off thing. Wonder if we could record it. So we asked A&M and they said, yes, we'll pay for it. Meanwhile, we were actually on a tour, going to be our last date. I remember we were in Los Angeles a couple of days before this gig. On the way up on the plane, I had thought that we didn't have a fast song, really. The ones that would have sounded good with an orchestra tended to be the more dramatic efforts. And I thought, well, what's quite easy that I could write that already speaks for itself, but would fit? And I thought of Conquistador. And I wrote, I wrote it out on the plane going up and finished it when I got the hotel. Put in a few extra bits to make it a bit different from the studio version. And that, in fact, it was good that we had that on there. But when we got there, we met with the conductor, who was a bit, well, he was quite nice. And the next day we had a rehearsal, and a lot of the men wore crash helmets, the orchestra. And as soon as we started playing, and we were playing the quietest that we could possibly play, they put earplugs in their ears, because they'd never heard anything like a rock band. I mean, one crack from BJ's snare was as loud in decibels as a whole orchestra playing a hit.
Procol Harum's live album with the Edmonton Symphony Orchestra turned out to be their most popular album ever in the U.S. Over the next 4 years, they would go on to put out 4 more albums, but never again equaled the live album. Recognizing that the times were changing drastically, Procol Harum disbanded in the spring of 1977, ironically on the 10th anniversary of the release of A Whiter Shade of Pale. A few months later, in a fitting end to a storied career, or so we thought, A Whiter Shade of Pale was chosen, along with Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody, as the best British pop single in 25 years. No less than Paul McCartney would later state that A Whiter Shade of Pale was his favorite song of the entire 60s. Clearly, Procol Harum's popularity and influence had been really widespread. But the story doesn't stop there, because in the fall of 1989, Gary Brooker, Keith Reid, and Matthew Fisher brought Procol Harum back to life. Over the next 2 years, Brooker, Reid, Fisher, and even Robin Trower wrote and recorded The Prodigal Stranger, their first music together in 2 decades. With more on the reformation of Procol Harum, here's lyricist Keith Reid.
It was something which we'd probably had probably not thought would happen, really, because I think we'd been asked to reform very many times, and it never felt right at all. And it was only when we, the people, felt that it was a good idea to do it that it happened. Other times it always been outside, you know, whether it be record companies or promoters or managers or whomever it might be, people perhaps having a vested interest in it. It never seemed a very good idea to us. There were never any good reasons. But when Gary called up and said, let's get together and write some songs, well, suddenly there was a really good reason to do something, because it was pretty much the same basis that we started in the first place. Getting together, writing some songs, eventually getting around to making a record.
Thank you.
Procol Harum's 1991 album The Prodigal Stranger. That's a Keith Reid commentary on manipulation called All Our Dreams Are Sold. I like that song. Gary Brooker still leaves Procol Harum in concert with 4 shows in Sweden and Finland announced for this early October. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Gary Brooker, Keith Reid, Matthew Fisher, and Robin Trout. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2013, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter, Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and the biggest names in rock at inthestudio.net.